Welcome to Vosai. We are begin part two of the fall semester of 2014 Chazar Shir for Contemporary Halacha. We're going to start with the Rabbi Risa's Shir on Halachas of Beis Din and Arkaos. The Torah says, Eila HaMishpatim Asher Tosim Lifneihem. That means even if it's Eila HaMishpatim, even if it's Torah law, you have to put Dafka Lifneihem, Velo Lifnei, two things. Lo Lifnei HaAkom, Velo Lifnei HaDiotos. From this we learn that you have to bring cases to court of qualified judges, not hadiotos, and also they have to be Jewish judges. It has to be based in Velofnei HaAkam. Rashi explains that there are two issues, two problems, bringing a case before a secular court. One is that you're, by going to their system, you're miyakir shem elilim, by saying, by revering their way of doing things in their institutions, that's miyakir shem elilim. And secondly, by not bringing your issues in front of Torah law, you're saying that Torah can't deal with them. That's a chilul Hashem. And there's a nafkamina between these two reasons, because if you use, what happens if you're willing to go to a Beis Din, but you want a secular law to be used? Well, there you might still have an issue of chilul Hashem, because you're saying Torah can't respond to this. And in the inverse, even if you go to a secular court and say, please judge us with halacha, that's a problem of being miyakir shem elilim. So you're sort of, there's a problem in each direction. We have to be concerned with both the issue of miyakir shem elilim as well as the issue of chil Hashem. Now, if a person wants to make a tenai, meaning between two parties, before they enter an agreement, a contract, and they want to make a tenai, would that help? Would that be binding? Meaning, could they say, we'll go before a Beis Din that are hediotos? Or could they say, we will go before a Beis Din, we'll agree to go before a Beis Din that's goyim? Both of these are learned from the... Both of these are should be also from the same pasuk. Eila mishpatim asher tasim, lefneihem velo lefnei hediotos, lefneihem velo lefnei ha'akam. So here are the... Rabban distinguishes, also cited in the Shulchan Aruch, distinguish between these two, lifnei velo lifnei blank. When it comes to lifnei velo lifnei hadiotos, there a tnai will help. So if two parties will choose to bring their case before a Jewish based in of hadiotos, it will be okay. That tnai will be binding, and they will be bound by that ruling. However, if both parties agree to go lifnei, lefnei goyim, that will not be accepted, because that will nevertheless be considered masa mashikos v'torah, and therefore even if two parties decide they're willing to appear in a secular court, that will be aser deoraisa. What happens in a different twist if both parties agree to go to Beis Din, but they're willing to empower the Beis Din, they both agree to empower the Beis Din to use secular law? So even though I mentioned before that there might be a problem of lefneihem of chil Hashem because you're not using halacha, for whatever reason, this issue, lemaisa is machlokas taz and sma. The sma says it's okay. The taz asers empowering a Beis Din, be masna for a Beis Din to use secular law. And that's going to bring us to the next discussion. When could it be that we can use or can invoke or can say, I want this transaction, this deal, this lease, this mortgage, this agreement between us to be governed by American law, New York law, this law. Now we're going to begin speaking about that issue, which is also the issue that comes up with prenup agreements, prenuptial agreements, where women might want to, their court cases, okay, they'll go to Beis Din, but they're scared to give up going to court, so they'll agree to court, you know, going to Beis Din if they will be granted certain, you know, rights or certain... ways of distributing monies. So here we have the whole story begins with a story. In the time of the Rashba, there was a woman who got a dowry from her father. She brought it into the marriage, and the woman died. So according to Torah law, who inherits the dowry? Her husband. Her husband, that means that the father who gave this dowry, let's say he got married 3 weeks before and she died soon, very quickly. She just, you know, couldn't bear her husband and she died from a heart attack because he's bothering him so much. So now the husband is 3 weeks into the marriage and he comes in, he gets $10 million. And the poor father of the girl who gave $10 million, assuming it would be for his family, his grandchildren, great-grandchildren, is up the creek. So the secular law said it would go back to the father. So here that was the question that the Rashba was asked. And the way the Rashba deals with it, unfortunately, is very unclear. Because first the Rashba says, well, let's follow Umdana. Everyone assumed that when they're going to be married, it would be sort of the way of the law of the land. And the Umdana was that it would stay with the father-in-law. But on the other hand, you're not allowed to do what the Goyim do, that uproots halacha, and that's you're undermining a lot of Hilchas Yerusha. And then he says, but you could always apply it tonight to Darusha B'mamon. And then, so the Rashba seems to be Sosa himself three or four times. The question is, how are we going to deal with this, again, without you and I seeing the text of the Rashba, how are we going to deal with these stiras, and what will be the yesod of the Rashba? What's the chiluk where the Rashba says sometimes it's okay to borrow their laws, and other times it's not okay to borrow their laws? So we're going to present at least six mahalchim right now, how to learn this Rashba, which is going to get to the point of, when can I borrow a secular law? The Beis Yosef himself distinguishes between dinei, using dinei goyim, which is okay, as opposed to dayanei goyim. You cannot go to a secular court, but you can use secular law in Beis Din. That's the Beis Yosef's understanding of this Rashba. A second understanding of this Rashba is that it depends on what your motivation is. If you're motivated because you just want to use, you just happen to want to use this law or this practice, this umdan or this assumption or this derech, this minhag, that's fine. If you're specifically doing it with an agenda to be like the goyim and to follow their way of doing things, that's not going to be okay. A third mahalach, where Ezra Basri suggests that it depends on how many people are using this. If it's a whole community is going to adopt the secular law, that's definitely a problem. If one individual, for whatever personal reason, or one contract between these two people, they for whatever reason want to adopt a certain secular law, that would be okay. Meaning the chiluk is between a community versus a yachid. Zalman Nechemya offers another chiluk, and in a way to explain this Rashba, that if you want to undermine a whole body of laws, like you want to get rid of all of Hilchos Yerusha and just use their set of Hilchos Yerusha, that's not okay. But if you want one point from their inheritance law, that will be okay. Another distinction of Tzvi Gardner, I think, in Minchas Tzvi, that the problem isn't following secular law, it's referencing the secular law. So if you want to use a specific secular law, don't say, we agree to be bound by the statutes of New York State or this division or this subsection. Just say, we agree to be bound by, and write the actual words of the law code, but don't refer to it, don't reference it by, you know, New York State statute XYZ. This is why when the prenups are written, and at least based on America's prenups, it doesn't say that we accept to divide our properties based on the laws of New York State, the laws of whatever. Rather, based on, you know, equitable distribution, which are whatever kinds of distribution New York State law happens to follow, but we don't actually reference following the laws of New York State. That's the Rashba and the ways to learn up the Rashba. Now, yes. Whatever it is. Did I say five? And five? Oh, so the last one is that we might not even paskin. I mean, the Rashba talks about different things. He talks about Din de Machlus Adina. He talks about borrowing secular laws. It could be that we don't even paskin. We only paskin like the Rashba regarding that we are bound by Din de Machlus Adina, but we don't paskin like the Rashba regarding his allowance of inserting secular law into our own contracts. Let's now talk about Mishpat Ivri, meaning, what happens if I go to Jewish people and I want to use some other set of laws? So let's talk about, before we talk about Mishpat Ivri, and specifically, let's say we're in an industry architecture, design, insurance, and we have our own arbitration boards who have our own, you know, the diamonds, and they understand our business, and there are certain assumptions that we work with in this business. So there, Rav Moshe says it is okay to work within the industry standards as an arbitration panel within the industry standards, because that's everyone's going into the deals with that understanding of that we're going to work with according to industry standards. That is just arbitration, and again, it's not a board bound by any legal. It's just within our field. That's what we all do. That's going to be okay. As far as Mishpat Ivri, there's going to be a little bit of an issue, because there, A, it's not one industry or one part of an industry. It's across the entire board. There's something called Israeli law. Secondly, the law is not Jewish. Third, they're bound by it. So accordingly, we're going to have all the major poskim seem to say that Mishpat Ivri will be usher. Be usher to bring a case in front of a Israeli court, and it would similarly be usher to be a judge in an Israeli court. What was the argument that was suggested? Mishpat Ivri is Israeli court system.
So you're really talking about Mishpatim in Israel?
I think they call it in academia, they might call it Mishpat Ivri, but you probably know better because you're a lawyer. So Menachem Elon, who's the big Mishpat Ivri man, he suggested the following rationale why we might be okay with the Israeli legal system. Based on the Rashba, different Rashba. Is it the same Rashba or different Rashba? I'm not even sure. The Rashba talks about Dayanim and Erkoz Shebesuria. Then if there are no qualified Dayanim to reckon, to deal with a certain case in a certain town, you could be Samech on Dayanim Shebesuria. We take three respectable people, and they do the best they can with whatever they... And as long as they base their decisions on common sense, it's Mutter. And in addition to that, there's a Meiri, who says that they could even consult these people are not lawyers, they're not judges, they're doctors and merchants, but they're just no Dayanim in town, so that's what they're going to do. The Meiri says they could even look at law books. So what do you see from that, says Menachem Elon? You see that you could use people other than Rabbanim or Dayanim, and they could use law books. That's what Menachem Elon suggested. The rejection of this argument is that which the Rashba says that Dayanim Shebesuria or Kol Shebesuria are okay is only if there are no Batei Din or no Dayanim who know Torah and are qualified to Paskin. That's first of all. Secondly, that which Dayanim Shebesuria are okay, it's only because they rule based according to their common sense, their logic. But if they were bound by a legal code, that would already be submitting yourself to some legal code other than Torah, and that would not be okay. That's the end of Mishpat Ivri. We're going to finish this shir with about seven scenarios where a person is permitted to take his case before a secular court. What happens if I want to take somebody to court and they refuse to come? So Nitva refuses to come to Beis Din. So that's the first scenario where I could, if I want to take somebody to court, Beis Din, he refuses, so I'm going to have to take him to court. What's the source for this? There are two possible sources. The Gemara Bava Kama has a funny lashon that if you call out to your friend and he doesn't respond, throw a wall upon him. So the Rush explains that's referring to a scenario where you call him to Din Torah and he doesn't come, throw a wall, meaning the secular courts upon him and bring him to court. That's the Rush. Secondly, a second source for this heter to bring a misarev to court is the Gemara that discusses a get me'usa. And the Gemara says that if a person, basically wants a person to give a get and he doesn't, so the erkos could, ovdei kochavim could beat him, and the erkos could say, "Asay mashi Yisrael omrim lacha." So, you are using their kos as a way of doing that which the Beis Din cannot do. The Chasam Sofer points out that if the whole logic of the Isra kos is because you're undermining halacha, well, here the Beis Din is sort of handing it over to the courts, so it's sort of an extension of the Beis Din's arms. That's going to be, there won't be any Chil Hashem over there, there won't be any undermining of Torah over there, because Beis Din is just using those courts. A next scenario that a person could take a fellow Jew to court is, let's say a person was taken to court. We'll talk about the next scenario, we'll talk about the following. It's going to be two inverse scenarios. Let's say I take you to court and I lose. So I say, oh shucks, New York State ruled against me, let me try and base them, maybe I could win there. So there, do I have the right to take you to court and to take you to Beis Din if I missed out by taking you to court, I lost? So there, there's a machlokas. But the Ramah paskins that if I was chutzpah enough to take you to court and lost, I can't have the triple chutzpah to not take you to Beis Din to try to beat you. That's going to be also the Ramah concludes. What about the defendant? What about you? I took you to court against your will, and I lost. So now... And now what? 1 second. I'm sorry, and I won, let's say. So now could you go to Beis Din to try to recoup your losses because you were schlepped to Beis Din. So here the Maharsham says it really depends on what your reaction was when I took you to court. When I took you to court, did you go willingly? Were you implicitly, willing? Or were you kicking and screaming? If you were kicking and screaming, but I forced you to court. So then you do have the right to recourse in a Beis Din. But if you were, that's if you're mocha from the beginning. But if you were mekabel it and you went ahead and went to court and went along with the procedures, then you will lose your right to come crying later to Beis Din. Third area where a person could take a fellow Jew to court, if you know that your opponent will not come to Beis Din. A fourth scenario is once the Beis Din rules, then you can go to court to enforce the Beis Din's ruling. Because that you're not using the court to paskin, you're just using the court to get the money, which you went to Beis Din. You just need to make it happen through the court. Another scenario is, let's say there's a chov borer, like a tuition agreement that everyone signed and the family's just not paying up. There, if there's a debt, there's a chov borer, you could collect that in civil court. Another scenario that you could take somebody to court is if you're not trying to get money, you just want the court to freeze their assets, to hold on, make sure they don't run away, make sure they don't give away or give out the money that you hope to collect from. So you want to get a restraining order or freeze their assets, that you could go to Beis Din. The final one is what? You could bring them to secular court to freeze their assets. And then, of course, you'll take the case to Beis Din. But at least the assets are frozen. If you need to collect, they'll be there to collect. And the final, and the last point in this shir, is that you could bring a guy to court, secular court, because we assume that he will not listen to a Beis Din. There's a question.
Yeah, in terms of the, if you know that one won't come to Beis Din, then you would see if I can try, and then Beis Din
if it's someone who you don't think will come, if you know he won't, so there's a discussion among the posting if you have to even try. Make it then you probably don't have to, but it's nice if you think there's a chance, an outside chance that he would. I think we would assume that anybody who's not religious, in the business world, a non-religious person in the business world, will probably not be interested in coming. You could assume that. But if you want to try at the base, get ahead there first, that would be great. Okay, we'll go now to the shiur about caring for children on Shabbos. Rabbi Sabalowski's shiur. We'll start with the issue of nursing on Shabbos. Now, nursing, a woman is allowed to nurse her baby, even on Shabbos, but if you would take a pumping machine and apply it to a cow, that would be an issur d'oraisa. So to do the same thing, to pump milk, if a woman needs to relieve milk, either with a manual pump or an electric pump, that should also be an issur d'oraisa. The problem is, what happens if a woman needs to nurse and she has a lot of milk, and we have to alleviate her pain for whatever reason. The baby's not eating, the baby's not there, the baby's in the hospital. So usually a woman would just pump that milk out like they would do to a cow. But here, there's an Issa D'oraisa involved. So what we're going to have to do is the following. We're going to have to knock off this Issa D'oraisa of Disha to make it only an Issa D'rabbanan. Once it's going to be an Issa D'rabbanan, we're going to say that it's going to be Mutter for Makom Tzar. How are we going to knock it down to an Issa D'rabbanan? What we'll do is we'll say that we'll throw away the milk. Therefore, the reason why I'm pumping, why I'm getting the milk out, why I'm doing this disha is a malacha she'ina tzrich l'gufa. I'm not doing it for the purpose of the milk. I'm doing it rather, I just don't want the milk there. It's like, I don't want the mace outside. I just don't want the mace in the room smelling up my room. So it's malacha she'ina tzrich l'gufa, which b'makom tzar will be mutter. Others say the idea behind throwing away the milk is not to knock off the disha d'oraisa to become a malacha she'ina tzrich l'gufa, but rather, if you throw away the milk, that's not called disha. If I pump something and the milk goes straight into soap on the bottom of a kli, or straight onto the floor, or straight down the drain, that's not a malacha at all. The next issue we'll talk about is making baby cereal, oatmeal. This morning, my baby had baby cereal, and I actually asked my wife about this. And she was, this Shabbos, actually. I mean, she knew the halacha, so this is on my mind. So, the halacha is that lisha is aser d'oraisa. Lisha, mixing flour with a liquid to make a dough, to make a thicker consistency, is aser d'oraisa. Now, there is a machlokas, which is the moment that lisha was aser. Was it the moment that you added water? Or is it the moment that you did the kneading with a K, the mixing, achiyagabo? Now, the halacha is regarding lisha and a few other malachas that shinui kla'achar yad makes it mutter l'chatchila. Usually, shinui in a malacha makes it not d'oraisa but only d'rabbanan. When it comes to lisha, it knocks it down from d'oraisa to mutter l'chatchila. The question is, how do you do a shinui? Well, we're not really sure what the moment of Isser is upon which we could do the shinui. If the moment of Isser was in a sinas hamayim, you have to do a shinui in a sinas hamayim. If the moment of Isser is the kneading, the mixing, then you have to do a shinui of the kneading. So, what we're going to have to say is, do a shinui, since we don't know which is the main moment of Isser, we're going to do a shinui both in the moment of sinas hamayim and in the moment of mixing. I asked my wife, what's the normal way to put water in? And we weren't doing Rabbi Salovsky's share, we weren't really sure. Do you first put in water, then put in the powder, first the powder, then the water? My wife said, you always want to put the powder in first, because based on how much powder you put in, that's how much water you know to put in. If you put in a lot of powder, if a lot of powder fell out of your box, so you'll put in more water. So on Shabbos, she does the opposite. First put in water, and then you sort of have to gauge. Now, more important than making these shinuyim, is to knock it down from Lisha D'oraisa to Lisha D'rabbanan. Some posts can say that you can only do this by Lisha D'rabbanan, which will be if you have a very loose consistency to your, not dough, but your lila. So therefore, the most important thing is to make sure there's a lot of water. It's very watery. Once it's very watery and it's only going to be in the D'rabbanan at most, then we say do your shinui in the Sha'as Nisinas Mayim by doing it out of order, whatever the normal order is, do the opposite. And additionally, do your shinui in the way it's being kneaded, the way it's mixed. So you could use your finger, do crisscross, lift up your finger after each time that you criss and cross. But again, this is all only b'sha'as hatzorech. If it's not for tzorech, for yourselves to make oatmeal on Shabbos, even though l'chor you could do the same thing, make yourself oatmeal on Shabbos afternoon, we will not be mako if it's not a tzorech for your child. Next issue. Because these kulas are not so clear. The next point that we're going to talk about is the malacha of tochein. Let's say you want to chop up food for the baby to very small pieces so it could chew it. So when it comes to chicken, meat, cheese, anything that's not kidulam in hakarka, the malacha of tochein does not apply. So you're allowed to crumb or cut up dice, mince, meat, chicken, eggs, tuna, all those things that are not gidulei karka. The problem is, what about vegetables? Vegetables, of course, are subject to the malacha of tochein. And how small is small? The poskim say we do not know how small is small. The Rishon of the Sefer Yireim says we don't know how small is small. So therefore, we will try to. The Rashba has a kula that if you do, just like when you do borer miyad, that makes it mutter. So too says the Rashba, if you do tochein miyad, meaning immediately before the meal, that will be mutter. So according to the Rashba, I could mince, I could cut up my vegetables, make a tiny garden, Israeli salad, right before the meal, even if the peas are very small, because it's miyad. Now, the poskim in general say that you should only rely on this Rashba. We're not so sure if we should rely on this Rashba alone, so therefore we try to do our cutting right before the meal, and we try not to cut the pieces too small. That's the conclusion of the Beis Yosef from Mishnah Berurah, to do whatever small cutting we need to do right before the meal, and not to make it too small. The next issue in Torochein is Tumush banana. Also, avocado would be the same issue. Here there's a Chumra v'chazanish who says that the whole heter that we just gave of this Rashba to chop right before a meal, that only applies by things that are chopped, cut. But things that are mushed, that's more similar to the tochein of the Mishkan where they ground up, they shmush the kernels, there we will not have a heter, we will not have a leniency of miyad, of immediate consumption. And therefore the Chazanish says there will be an Issur d'oraisa to mush a banana. However, the Chazanish says, if you do a bishinui, like with the back of a knife, perhaps the back of a spoon, the handle of any other utensil, that will make it mutter l'chatchila. So Moshe Feinstein disagrees with this Chazanish. He says that smushing should be no different than chopping, dicing, and you should also have the leniency of doing it miyad immediately before the meal. But nevertheless, Moshe is machmir for the Chazanish, so it says, okay, so do what the Chazanish said you should do. Do it with a shinui. So you mush a banana, you mush an avocado on Shabbos, make guacamole, do it with the back of a utensil. Sorry? I think if you use the back of a... if you do it with a shini, I don't even know if you're going to need to be right before the suda, but I don't know. But I think my shini might be an independent heter l'chatchila, if it's a suri shini. I remember it might be mutter independent, even not samach l'suda. But I'll have to check it out. Okay, let's go to diaper changing. After they ate the bananas and their avocados, they make, and now they have to be changed. So there was one issue, but three issues with diaper changing. The first is using the baby wipes, because baby wipes could be an issue of either kibus / libun or dash / schita, if we assume that the liquid is absorbed into the wipe, and then as you apply it to the baby's bottom, it gets squeezed out of the wipe, that would be aser. Those is sort of machlokes and metzias, is those who permit baby wipes are assuming that the liquid is not, you're not squeezing the liquid out of the wipe onto the baby's bottom. Rather, the wipe is wet, and you're taking the surface moisture, and you're letting the surface moisture, you know, clean the baby's bottom. That's as far as wipes are concerned. As far as diapers, there are two issues. There's korea, and there's tofer. The background for this is that the Rambam writes that korea, ripping, and tofer, sewing, does not just apply to taking a string, a thread, and, you know, sewing something together, but it's even medabik niyaros together and being mafrid niyaros. Both of those would be isurim d'oraisa, those two opposite acts. Now, Velcro, if you look at a Velcro under a microscope, you'll see there's no attaching, they're just little tiny, almost microscopic hooks, and there's just hooking things in and unhooking them. That's how Velcro works. That's definitely mutter. Therefore, some maybe Pampers that have Velcro are not even questionable. We're only talking about when there's a real adhesive. You're applying a sticker and ripping off a sticker. So the issue that is at hand is to try to figure out if we will have a kula for tofer or for korea if it's ena shel kayama. Where do we get this idea from? Because there's a different malacha, kosher, where we say that kosher is only asr if it's a kesher shel kayama. You and I know we tie bows on our shoes on Shabbos, but if it would be a kesher shel kayama, that would be a problem. So what about tofer, sewing, a sewing that's not shel kayama? That's a machlokas. And the Rama sounds like he's mekel midina, but he doesn't want people to do it. So if that's the case, when you close the diaper up before you throw it out, that might very well be shel kayama, because you're closing it and then going to be throwing it down the chute or the garbage, and it's going to stay that way for all of eternity. That might be a kesher shel kayama, not a kesher, I'm sorry, a tofer shel kayama, and that might be a problem. So before you throw it out, don't close it up and stick together the tabs. When you have new diapers and you want to untab the tabs, adhesives, so you could open up the diaper, there maybe that's also, it was there the whole time and now you're opening it up for good. Maybe that could also be shel kayama. There's a svara that since the whole point of the manufacture that you could open it up at any time, any point in time, that's not called shel kayama because it's made to be opened at any point in time. Others suggest you should open and close them before Shabbos. Fine, that's the issue of diapers. When it comes to diaper rashes and applying ointments, we have a separate malacha of memareach and the tolda of memachek, which is smoothing ointments onto skin. And the Shmir Shabbos, the Chazmir says that the way to do it is like this. You take ointment, you desitin or A&D ointment, you blob it on the baby's bottom, you put on the diaper, and as the baby moves around, it will spread itself. And it works. Why is this mutter? So the Shmir Shabbos Kilchas said, because babies all have a din of a chola Hashem Vasakana, and we allow malachas kila achar yad for a chola Hashem Vasakana. So therefore, this is definitely smoothing something kila achar yad, and it's for a chola, for a baby who has a din of a chola, and therefore we'll be able to do it. Which means that for an adult, you might not have the, for a healthy adult who just wants skin cream, you might not have this option. This is only for a baby who has a din of a chola. Rabbi Ribiat has a different take on the Chaz Nishas Kula. He says, no, that's not called memarech. Memarech is an act of smoothing, plopping cream on, and putting the diapers on. That's not smoothing. That's not what memarech is at all. Okay, the next main issue we'll talk about is, the final issue is carrying. 2 points. One will be carrying, and the other is if there is a baby's injured. Carrying a baby where there's no Erev. So even though the Gemara tells us there's a heter for the Issa Daraisa of Hotzah, if a person walks, Chai Nosi Es Atzmo, but still, it only applies if the baby's walking, and B, it's still going to be Asa Darabana. So what happens if I take my baby to shul? This happened to me once. Took the kid to shul, he walked to shul, and then on the way home from shul, he decided that he's not walking home. So obviously the best thing to do is to bribe them, give them lots of candies when they get home. Second best is to get a guy, because this is a longer discussion. If you have a guy, it's Amir Lenachri, and we live in a Carmelis, so it's a shvus de shvus, and the baby crying in the middle of, you know, block and a half from the house could be sort of a b'makom chol, b'chol b'makom mitzvah, so that would be a shvus de shvus b'makom choli mitzvah or something like that. And if there's no choice, then you just not try to do some other derabanan way of carrying, which would be pachas pachas midalat amos, or carry the baby with two people, shnayim she'asa uha. And as far as a guy pushing a stroller, these are shilas in certain communities where, especially where rabbis go out of town and try to build a community or build an eruv, but they still have to have a shul on Shabbos so that they get people to be willing to fund. And there's one, a friend of ours who's in this shir a few years ago, is a rabbi out of town, and this is an issue in his community. They're trying to build an eruv right now in California, but they want people to come to shul. The entire community are bali tshuva, people who weren't religious who are now becoming or now religious, and they actually have a system of paying $10 to the neighborhood public school, high school students to push your stroller, $10 a push. So it's a good deal if you're, you know, Saturday morning for an 11th grader in the neighborhood public school. But in our neighborhood, that would not be okay. Why? Because the Shmir Shas Kilchasa says that there's going to be, since we have a minhag now that we don't push strollers, again, the question why it might be mutter is it's a Carmelis, a milanachri in a Carmelis, but makam mitzvah. If we assume it's a mitzvah to get your 1.5-year-old to shul, I'm not convinced, but I guess if you can't leave it at home, it's a mitzvah for you to come to shul, perhaps. But Shmir Shabbos says we don't do that where there's a minhag not to push strollers, like in anywhere in the tri-state area. So anywhere in the tri-state area, where there's a Jewish community, we wouldn't do that, because that would be a Zilzul Shabbos. It happens to be in that community where that person lives, there's no minhag of how to keep Shabbos, because no one kept Shabbos until this group of people started coming to Shul. And therefore, perhaps there, it might be okay, actually. As far as injuries, whenever there's a situation of chola she'ein bo sakana, nafal mishkav, then of course amilu nachri is always mutter, and a child who's not feeling well is always going to be in the status of a chola she'ein bo sakana, and you could tell a guy to do whatever you need to do. What about other isurim drabanan? Like, for example, let's say a baby needs a nebulizer to help them, they have a heavy breathing. Obviously, if there's a sakana, go to the hospital. If not, sometimes they just have, they're stuffed up, or they need, if they have asthma situations, so they need a nebulizer. So, could you turn it on yourself, kla achar yad, on Shabbos? So, ideally, you should get a guy to turn it on. If you can't get a guy, you should have it on Shabbos clock. If you can't get a guy, it's not on Shabbos clock. There are some who, Shlomo Zalman himself has a kula that says that if you do it, kilacha yad, b'shas hadchak, it might be mutter even on an issa daraisa perhaps, and therefore Shlomo Zalman would say, b'shas hadchak mamish, where there's no other option, you'd be actually able to turn on a nebulizer on Shabbos for a sick baby, using your elbows, your teeth, some other kilacha yad way to do it. Okay, that's the end of this year. For the next year, do you want Dina de Machlis Adina or Mikvaos? All together now. What do you want? Dina de Machlis Adina. Okay. So for Dina de Machlis Adina, this is Rosh Shechter's Shir. The first thing to realize is that there is a halacha that is granted to the government of Dina de Machlis Adina, but it's only Dina if it's fair. However, a chamsanusa or gazanusa de malchusa is not dina. So therefore, if there's, the olden days, the taxes were unfair, and therefore, one might not be obligated to pay taxes in a time where it's gazanusa de malchusa, but in a situation where there's fair taxation, there would be dina. That would be a dina de malchusa, and the taxes would be, the government has the right to levy taxes. And similarly, the Rambam writes that if a person doesn't pay their taxes, that would be being monea manas hamelach, taking away from what the right that the melach has to collect taxes via dina de malchus adina. But we'll see soon in a minute that this sugi of dina de malchus adina really might not apply to our taxes, but we'll see that in 2 minutes. What is the source for dina de malchus adina in the first place? Here, the Gemara Sanhedrin tells us the story that Bnei Yisrael wanted to get, in the time of Shmuel and Shaul, they wanted a melech, and Shmuel warned them, you better be careful, melechs do all kinds of mean things, like levy taxes. Now, regarding the taxes and the other things listed in that Gemara between about Shmuel and Shaul, there's a machlokas Rav and Shmuel. There's a machlokas, Shmuel says that all those things that Shaul HaNavi threatened Bnei Yisrael, you guys, you sure you want a melech? Shaul meant it. All those things are melech mutterbo. Rav says, no, he's just trying to scare them, but they're not necessarily, mutter to do, but we paskin like Shmuel, that whatever was Amar b'parshas hamelech, whatever Shmuel Hanavi tried to scare Bnei Yisrael, that is actually the right of a king, and therefore you see from here that a melech has a right to collect taxes. Now keep in mind that was Eretz Yisrael. Even though many like to quote the Ran in Darim, who says that the whole point of collecting taxes is like a rental fee. The king is charging you a rental fee for you living on his property. Well, Eretz Yisrael, which belongs to Hashem, no one could charge you a rental fee if it's Hashem's, and he lets the Jewish people there. So therefore, according to that run, people argue that there's no source for, you don't have to pay taxes, but unfortunately, or fortunately, it depends on how you look at it, that opinion of the run doesn't even make it into the Shulchan Aruch or the Ramah, and therefore, Dina de Malchusa would obligate a person to taxes, and we see the story of Shmuel HaNavi and Shaul was even in Eretz Yisrael, so Dina de Malchusa Dina would apply a right to taxation even in Eretz Yisrael. Now, it's important to know that Rosh Shechter's opinion is, even though the Gemara talks about taxes in the context of Dina de Malchusa Dina, that the following is Rosh Shechter's understanding. Rosh Shechter understands that the whole sugya of taxes being part of Dina de Malchus Dina is just a king's right to make money on his population. This, he has a fair taxation to make money, to become rich, to build himself an army. But, says Rashachta, nowadays our taxes work differently. We live in a democracy, and democracy is governed by what we or our elected representatives decide. And therefore, we are more similar to a different sugya, not Dina de Malchus Dina, but our taxes are more similar to shutfus. And the halacha is in Hilcha Shutfin that people who live in an area and share needs, or go to a shul and share needs, or live in a community and share needs, are automatically, by default, joined together as shutfin, even though they didn't make a formal agreement, and every person in that neighborhood, shul, are bound by that shutfus, even if they specifically might disagree with what the rov decide. And the Gra says that the source for following the majority in such a shutfus is Achari Rabim Lahatos. The same pasuk that tells you to follow the majority in other decisions, is also the source that a minority shutuf is bound by the decision of the majority shutfin. So if there are five shutfin in a company, and four of them want to sell, you can't have one shutuf say, oh, I want to hold out and, you know, wait another for a better price. No, he's going to be swept after the majority, and he'll be forced to sell along with the majority. And therefore, in America, the shutfus that we have a federal shutfus, we have a shutfus with New Yorkers, we have a shutfus with people who live in New York City, and therefore we have three different tax levels, and we're shutfin in all those services. And therefore, if we don't pay taxes, says Rashachter, we will be stealing from our fellow shutfin, who are both Jews and non-Jews, and that would be aser without question. That's Rashachter's understanding of taxes. Now, let's talk about Dina de Malchus Dina, not in the context of taxes, but in other parameters. Dina de Malchus, the Shach writes that Dina de Malchus Dina applies not just to tell us that we're bound to the laws of the land, but also in the very yesod of defining what is money. There are certain things in the Torah that require a halachic money. That's Pidyon Maaser Sheni. If I want to be poda by Maaser Sheni on a coin, it has to be legal tender, declared by government. Another aspect in halacha is that for ribis, in defining peira and tiva, if you learned the fourth parak of Bava Metzia, you know that there's peira and tiva. And there was one other which I don't remember. Does anyone remember the third aspect where the Torah declares that... what? I think peira ben is shavak kesef kekesef. I don't think it's peira ben, because you can give us a set of svarim instead. I'm not sure where else. There's another situation where you need kesef. I don't remember what it is. Keep in mind, though, that we do not apply Dina de Malchus Dina. I actually had a shayla, terrifying shayla, last week. I don't think it was a shayla. It was a conversation. An old student of mine who's in medical school, different background than yours, comes from a different place and is in a different place, perhaps. And he's in medical school, and he was telling me, he was asking me, like, hey, what do you think about, if the law of the land has a certain definition of what death is? So does Dina de Malchus Dina say that a Jewish doctor could pull the plug on a terminally ill patient because, hey, according to the law of the land, the person's dead, or you're allowed to pull the plug? And obviously that question is missing out the entire understanding of what Dina de Malchus Dina is. Dina de Malchus Dina has nothing to do with the realm of Isser, or murder, or life, or Shabbos. Dina de Malchus Dina is only in the realm of financial interactions between two Jewish parties. Within one Jewish party and one Gentile party. If there's two Jews, we do not apply Dina de Malchus Dina. We apply going to Beis Din, like we spoke about in the previous shir, two shirim ago. If it's a Jew with a Gentile, then we'll follow Dina de Malchus Dina regarding money, monetary issues. We will not use Dina de Malchus Dina in issues of divorce. We will not use Dina de Malchus Dina in issues of Yerusha, because in Yerusha, of course, and in divorce, of course, both parties are Jewish, and therefore we do not apply Dina de Malchus Dina. Rav Henkin says, even though we just mentioned that between two Jews we do not say Dina de Malchus Dina, there is a certain type of law that we will apply Dina de Malchus Dina even to two Jewish parties. And that is, says Rav Hekin, when the law is litikun hamedina. So let's say there's a, I live in a building owned by a Jew. He's a landlord, I'm a tenant. Well, there are tenant laws in New York City, rent control laws in New York City, and those are all litikun hamedina. There are bankruptcy laws in America, which are litikun hamedina. Whatever reason the government feels that this is better for the economy, and therefore they create these set of laws. So what happens if I go bankrupt and I owe you money? What happens if I have a dispute with my landlord or a rent control question? So there, we will apply dina de machlusa dina because it's latikun hamedina, because the same way the government does a tikun hamedina for the goyim, they want to do that tikun hamedina for everybody, including Jews included, and therefore dina de machlusa dina will apply, and therefore the regular halachas of me renting from my landlord will not follow halacha, rather will apply, will, since there's a tikun hamedina, we will use dina de machlusa dina. Similarly to bankruptcy. You should probably go to Beis Din, and they would be able to use Beis Din Rav Hekin, the Dina D'Malchus Adina, to adjudicate this tenant landlord case. Thank you. One exception, two exceptions. Where, actually, we'll now say two more exceptions. We just said one exception. Dina de Machlus Adina applies all between Jew and Gentile. When do we say that Dina de Machlus Adina will apply even between two Jews? We just mentioned one scenario, which is when there's a Tikkun HaMedina. We're now going to mention two more. That was Rav Hekin. Now we'll mention two other scenarios, two shachs, where Dina de Machlus Adina will apply even between two Jews. The shach says, let's say you have two parties that are Jewish, and halacha, and they have a dispute, and halacha is silent, doesn't say anything about their case. Then, if the law of the land does address their case, we will apply dina de machlus adina, where halacha is silent about it. That's another scenario where we will apply dina de machlus adina even between two Jews. The Chazon Ish gets up and screams, Shai v'kayim against the Chai v'kayim against the Shach. What do you mean? There's no such thing as halacha not saying something. Halacha either says you're chayev or you're pater. If you're not chayev, then you're pater. If you're not part of the Nechayah, so there's no such thing as being silent. And there's no such thing as a case where the Torah doesn't say that you're Chayav or Pater. Fine. So the Chazon Ish rejects that Shach. Another case where there will be Dina de Machlus Adina even between two Jews is, let's say you have a store, Macy's. Macy's was started by a Jew? I think so, right? Okay, let's talk about Levi Strauss has a store. Mr. Levi and Mrs. Strauss are definitely Yidden, and you go to the Levi Strauss factory store and you have a question about the return policy and a dispute about the return policy. You wanted to return those jeans, they were too tight, they didn't fit you, so do you have, are we going to follow the Dina de Machlus Adina, whatever the law of making returns in retail stores are, or are we going to say you're both Jews, so therefore you have to follow Halacha? So the Shach says that since many people come to that store, and they're going to have a law that applies to all the people, all the guys who come to their store, they're not going to be able to have like this buy, you know, oh, for Jews, we have this way of doing business, for guys, we have another way of doing business. So since their clientele includes both Jews and non-Jews, everybody will have their regular set of laws, whatever governs Levi Strauss's return policy, even if you happen to be Jewish, because otherwise, obviously, by doing business with Levi Strauss, you're assuming that you're willing to go ahead, and it's like you made a tie and going ahead with the policies that they have. So therefore, if there are both Jewish and non-Jewish clients, we will apply Dina de Machlus Adina. This shiur finishes up with the concept of Mesira. I'm sorry, I'm not going to be able to take questions. I have to leave in 11 minutes. And we have two more shiurim to do to finish this. So I left the easier one for last. Mesira. So here we know that an important story in Bava Metzia. The story goes that one of the Amoraim, one of Tanan, Rabbi Elazar, son of Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, was hired by the Roman government to find Jewish criminals, even if it was in certain cases that those Jewish criminals will be given a death penalty by the government, even if they just didn't do Sunday's Chai Misa. Eliyahu HaNavi says, what in the world are you doing? And he responds, I'm cleaning up the bushes. I'm removing the kotzim and hakarim. It says, Eliyahu Navi, Yavo bal hakotzim, Hashem will take care of it. You don't have to do his dirty work. Eliyahu Navi didn't say, you're doing something asr. He just said, it's not right for somebody like you to be doing this kind of dirty work. So the Rishonim there say that that is telling you that it's not appropriate to do Messiah, but there's no Isser to turn a Jewish person over to the secular authorities, even if it will be killed, even if it's just for something like stealing, if that happens to be the law of the land. In other words, there's no Isser of Messiah to do something, to give over a Jew to be killed, if the law of the land is that that's the law, to kill. That a person who violates this, whatever criminal offense, is the law. However, the only time we're allowed to turn somebody over is if that person did violate some halacha. So then, if they violated some halacha, you can turn them over to the authorities, even if the authorities have a more strict punishment than Torah law would have. Even if it's more than appropriate, but if that's what they say they think they have to do, if they have to punish somebody, you know, you steal, we're going to slice you, like in India. Anyone who gets raped is automatically executed. Why? Because that's where, right now, there's a problem in India, there's too much gang raping, so that's what they say. So a Jew would be able to turn over a fellow Jew for rape, even if halacha says that if a man rapes a woman, he pays 50 shekel, v'lo yishchal shachal kol yamav. But if it would be in India, he would be able to turn that fellow Jew to the Indian authorities, and the Indian authorities would shoot him in the head. That would be mutter. Since, as long as the Jew did violate a halacha, it's asr rape, even if the punishment they give is going to be worse. So, for example, let's say, when is there an isr masir? The isr masir is, let's say, on law books, it says, if you do this, you get that. If you do A, you get punished with B. But the punishment that the person will end up getting is even more than B. Apparently, I wouldn't know this, but Rashad said in the state prisons, not the federal prisons, the state prisons, you don't just go to prison. You go to prison and then you get beaten up by the prison guards and the fellow prisoners. It didn't say that you have to get beaten up because you evaded taxes, you get thrown to state prison. It didn't say there that you have to get beaten up in prison. So there will be an Isser of Mesira, meaning to do something, to turn a fellow Jew over where he will be punished even more than the secular law requires him to be punished. That is where the Isser of Mesira does apply. However, let's say there's going to be a Chilul Hashem involved. Like I say, I don't want to testify in court because I don't want to testify against a fellow Jew. The court hears that it will be a terrible Chilul Hashem. So there, in the case of a Chilul Hashem, we allow even Mesira. Even what I just said would be also where he'd get punished more than he otherwise would, but in a case of Chil Hashem, even that becomes permitted. So besides allowing Mesira, if there is a Chil Hashem at risk, there are two other situations where we do permit Mesira, again, even if he's going to suffer more than Jewish and federal and the governmental law, he'll suffer more than that, that's Mesira, but it will still be permitted, A, in Chil Hashem, B, if he's a Meitzer Es Harabim. He's a public menace, a pedophile, a ganav, a child abuser, a spousal abuser, a con artist. There you could do Mesira, even if he's going to suffer more than it actually says on the books. And the third situation is if he's a maka es chavero, again, in that situation, even Mesira, where he's going to be punished more than what's on the books, is permitted. That's the end of this shiur. One other point that Shefter added, as far as Mesira, let's say the tax collector is coming to town. So could you somehow, you know that you're one of the rich guys, he's going to try to collect a lot of money from you, could you somehow divert him to your friend, your fellow Jew, who is also rich, and maybe save yourself by diverting the money, by diverting his attention to your fellow Jew? So that the other Jew, could you save yourself by diverting his attention to the fellow Jew? So the Shulchan Aruch brings the situation, if a flood is coming, and you want to put sandbags to divert the water from, instead of soaking, flooding your own property, or flood your neighbor's property, it depends on the following. If the flood is on its way here but hasn't yet come, you're allowed to set up the sandbags such that when it comes, it will be diverted, the water will be diverted and ruin your friend's field. But if the flood is already here, and the water is already coming, then you're not allowed to divert the danger away from your property to your friend. Similarly, if the tax collector comes and he has you on the list, you're one of the people he's going to collect from. You can't set up a way to divert the guy who's going to collect money from you to somebody else. But if he's just coming to the town, he says, who are the 10 rich Jews here? Then the mabul hasn't yet arrived. You are allowed to push off the taxes to somebody else. The Chavetz Chaim apply the same idea. Let's say there's a draft. Could you get out of the draft and get your fellow Jew into the draft? So if they come to town with certain names, if your name's on the list, you can't get out of it and push it onto a fellow Jew. But if they just say, we wanted to get 10 Jews, so then they didn't decide who yet, it's like the mabul hasn't yet arrived, and you could divert it to somebody else. Let's talk about mikvahs. Do you want to do, if we have only time for one shir, one more shir, do you want to do mikvahs or women's issues? Mikvahs wins. So, first of all, a men's mikvah is not a mikvah, period. It's not a halachic mikvah, and therefore never be tovel kalim, which needs tevila d'oraisa, in a men's mikvah, because you will be violating nisurim d'oraisa if you do that. Kalim mikvah need b'mei nida yiskata, nida mayim shem hanida tovelas behen. Men's mikvah are not necessarily that. Now, there's two things in the world. There's a mikvah and there's a mayim. And mikvah and mayim, a mikvah means rainwater that's still, S-T-I-L-L, stagnant, and a mayan is flowing water. And there are two halachic differences between a mikveh and a mayan. First of all, a mikveh will only be kosher if the waters are still and not flowing, as opposed to a mayan who can be mitar even if they are the waters are flowing, even if it's zochalim. Second halacha is the shear. A mikveh needs 40 sa'a, and a mayan is b'masha, meaning as long as it's big enough to fit the item that's being toveled, or the person that's being toveled, in that water, even if it's less than 40 sa, that will be a kosher mayim. An ocean, the Mishnah says explicitly, is always kosher to be as a mikvah, as a mayim, and therefore it will work even if the waters are, the waves are going back and forth, an ocean is kosher. What about a river and a lake? Well, it should depend. If it's mei geshamim, is a mikvah water, rainwater, then it should only be kosher if it's still. And rivers are running. They're not still, so it should be a problem. If it's meimayan, if it's spring water, well, it should be kosher even if it's flowing. Well, the Gemara in Adarim has a machlokas about this. And there's a machlokas as follows. One opinion says that it depends what time of the year it is. I think it's Rav. He says, during the spring, when all the water is flowing, you had a lot of rainwater, meaning all the snow that came to the mountains. And during the spring, the water levels are very high because all the water from the rain, from the winter season, from the rain season, floods into the low-lying rivers. So most of the water is rainwater. Rainwater is only kosher if it's still. And this is a river. It's not still. So it's usher, it will be possible to be tovel in a river. However, in the fall, after the summer, the end of the summer, where the rivers are low, and whatever water is there is only from spring water because all the rainwater already left, flowed away, so then it would be kosher. That's Rav. I think Rav. Shmuel says no. He holds that whenever there is water that comes from rain, there's more water that comes from, the mayim comes to match it, and there's more mayim water, and you could always go to a mik, you could always go in a rain, in a river, whenever you want. The Shulchan Aruch is machmir and says, we do not say it's always kosher, rather it depends on the majority, and depends what season you're in. However, the Ramah brings a Maharik who says that if there's no other place to be tovel around, you could use a river whenever you need to. Ravadia says that even though the Kula is of the Ramah says that you could use a river any time of the year, even though it's Ramah, but the Ramah was quoting Maharik who's Sfardi, and therefore even Sfardim could be making like that Maharik. And B'Shas Adchak, I had this Shaila regarding a young lady who was becoming religious, so it's B'Shas Adchak, and she wanted to do Tefillas Kalim for her father's Christmas party. So, I think doing tefillas kalim for your father's Christmas party is a shas adchak. There's no mikvah in wherever in Colorado where she was, and I was mekel for her based on this maharik. That if there's no other thing around, you could be somech on a river, which there was a river near her, any time of the year. There are two ways to deal with the two kinds of mikvahs in the world. If you have a bor of Geshem, that's a kosher mikvah. Problem is, you don't want to put people into that bor, because then it will get dirty very quickly. So we do one of two things, either hashaka or zriya. Hashaka is that we have a bor geshem and a bor tvila, and we open up a small hole, kishoferes hanod, let's say it's 2 inches in diameter, or 3 inches in diameter, and that kiss, hashaka, nishika, that with the water, two waters kiss, and machshir, the water from the tap, which was kissed to the water of the mikvah of megashamim. Now, there's a machlokas. Does that, could you just unplug it, let the waters kiss, and replug it back? Or do the waters have to stay kissing, does the hashaka have to continue while the tefillah takes place? So the mechaber is meikel and says, even if, as long as the waters kissed once, the waters were hukshar, and even if it's now plugged up, it's mutter. The shach, however, is machmir and says that it's appropriate to have the nekev open even during tevilah. That's hashaka. The next way to create a mikvah is by zriya, planting. I have a mikvah of, I have a kosher mikvah. I then take tap water and flow it. I just turn on a tap. It flows into the kosher mikvah and rolls over the wall into a bor next to it. And that, so I planted it sort of. I was zorei it in the kosher mikvah, and it rolls over into this bor where we will have the women bitovel. That's called zriya. Obviously, you solve a problem of never having to worry, oh my gosh, did I ever do the hashaka? Is it open now? Is it not open now? Well, all the water that you have in this bor zriya came from a kosher mikvah and became kosher through the zriya, so you don't have to worry if you forgot to do the hashaka, didn't do the hashaka. The water is only in the bor zriya because you were zoreya. So you will definitely have kosher water. You don't have to worry if, like, oh, maybe I forgot to do the hashaka. There's a problem with zriya, and that is that since when you do a zriya, you start with an empty pit next to a full pit, and you pour the water into the full one, to the bor geshem, and it overflows into an empty pit. Wait a second, if that empty pit had 3 lugim of non-kosher water, mayim she'uvim, on the bottom of it, then anything that you put on top of it will vayter be pasul. You can't be machshir it. So you're going to have a very big problem with zriya, if there were 3 lugim of not kosher water on the bottom. A problem that we have with zriya is that when I do zriya, the water comes into the kosher mikvah and it flows over into the empty tub. That water is zochel, it's flowing water. So how could you, and we're not talking about a mayan here, we're talking about a mikvah, so how could you be machshir this bor to be tovel in with mikvah water if the water comes in a flowing fashion? So Moshe Feinstein answered that since the psul of zoch, of mayim zochelin for mikvah water is only a psul in the maisa tvila. To be tovel while the water is flowing, that's pasul. But to have a mikvah that has been created via, through flowing water, that Ramosha was mekel. That's mutter.
Some of the Mishnah
things
are okay.
That's how he made the chuk, based on that Mishnah, yes. We'll finish with one more point, even though there is a bit more. There is a different sugya called Nasan Sa and Natal Sa. That means that, let's say there's a displacement. If you have two boros, if you have one bor geshem, and there's a kiss to the other bor of water from the tap, and you have an open hole, what's going to happen eventually? The water will displace each other, and it eventually will reach an equilibrium. The water will all dissipate, and you'll have 50-50. You won't be able to keep your pristine mikvah water and your other water. You won't be able to do that. So, lechatchila, the shach says that we do want to have kosher water there the whole time. We don't want it to be displaced. That's not al savanasan sa. So to solve this problem of two shachs, one shach that we mentioned earlier is that we should have the hashaka hole open the whole time, and then this that I'm saying now, the not al savanasan sa and not al sa, the shach says that we should be machmir to always have a mikvah with real mei geshem. Those two shachs are very hard to have simultaneously, because if you're going to leave the door open, that little hole open, you're going to have the water going back and forth. You're not going to have a full 40 sa of pristine geshem water. So the solution to that, to trying to be machmir for both shachs, is the mikvah of the Lubavitcher mikvah, the Rebbe Rashab, of bor al gabe bor. If you put a bor of geshem deep in the floor, and that water is going to be cold. So where is it going to stay? Right there. On top of that, put a floor with a little hole. And on top of that floor, put your mikvah of tap water. So what are you going to have? You're going to have the tap water on top will be heated. So where will it stay? On top. The cold water on the floor is cold. So where will it stay? On the floor. And there's a hole in between to connect them. So you will be able to keep that hole open. And you'll still have, on the bottom, the cold water will be staying there. You'll have your mei geshem forever. The Divrei Chaim, the Sanz Rebbe, asks, what do you mean? But we know that Katafer Sein Achibur, and therefore if there's a vertical or component to this Chibur, that's not going to be a connection, and therefore you will not have accomplished Hashaka at all. So to solve this problem of with Gor Bor Al Gabi Bor, the solution is to have a Bor Al Gabi Bor and put another Bor sideways. So therefore you have a hashaka also from the side, and that will be makshir, the bor al gabe bor. I wish we could talk about this further at length, and I did not have time to go through the women's issues shir, and I have to go. So thank you so much for coming, and Hatzlacha Rabbah, we'll see you on Thursday at 1 o'clock.